Chapter 6. The Montague Gardens Hotel, London, England, July 4th, 2017. 2:03 p.m. Shigidi turned away from the verdant expanse of garden at the sound of a plate being set on their table near the open terrace of the restaurant. He'd been lost in thought, his mind dreamily sifting through recent memories, from the lush white beaches of Thailand and Malaysia, to the grey streets of Lagos, where he'd first met Noma, drifting everywhere except for his immediate surroundings. Noma was seated next to him, nursing a cool glass of Malbec in her right hand, and staring at a steak salad which had just arrived, red and wet and green and glistening, like an offering. The restaurant was full of older men and women with tufts of snow-white or greying hair seated on the woven cane chairs, leisurely drinking tea and eating off dainty porcelain plates. They were surrounded by greenery outside and inside, a variety of potted plants set in corners like household gods, and vines eagerly climbing along white wood trellises. There was one gentleman in a business suit eating by himself at a table near the door, but no young couples or teenagers or even children. Oloru sat across from Shigidi, drawing very little attention from the other guests, which was typical given Oloru's uncanny ability to blend in anywhere. The old god was lavishly dressed and should have turned a few heads. He was wearing a white, embroidered agbada with its loose sleeves bundled up around his shoulders, a long-leaning phylum that covered the top of his afro, and an assortment of colourful beads around his neck. But, perhaps more importantly, he was aglow, radiating electric white spirit particles from his entire body, like there was a star burning beneath his skin.
Kabiesi,
Shigidi started, using Olong's royal title out of habit, as he finally broke the silence.
Why are you shining?
Oh, good, you're back with us, Olong responded, smiling as he took a sip of water from a thick, tall glass.
Shigidi grunted, sorry, blame jet lag.
No, actually I won't,
he said, slowly waving a glowing finger in the air like he was admonishing a child.
You're still fundamentally an Orisha. We don't get jet lag, especially not after Noma rearranged your physical form. So, no, I'll blame whatever problem you two have been trying to avoid talking about since you got here.
He leaned back into his chair.
Whatever it is, don't let it get in the way of our business. And yes, I am glowing, but only you and others like you can see it. It's part of my diplomatic arrangement with the British Spirit Bureau. I, just like every other employee of a foreign spirit company, must openly declare myself as a foreign spirit company representative while I am within the UK's borders. Therefore, I glow.
Oshi, shine, shine, Bobo.
And I assume their spirit entities also have to do the same when they are in your territory, Noma asked with a smirk.
You already know that they don't. Olong rolled his eyes. You've been around enough. Europe isn't like Asia or Africa. Border restrictions are a function of power, not security, or fairness, even spiritual borders. But I choose my battles, and I have my ways.
Of course you do, Noma said, crossing her legs.
But this is exactly why I am so grateful that you two are, how do you Oyibo say it again, off the books, You can move freely between territories, undeclared, untraced, undetected, unless you mess something up and get caught. You don't need to carry this glow, he added, circling a finger around his head. But it's fine. The people around us just see me as a bespectacled old man with a beer belly and a snow-white afro. They can't see my true form unless I allow them to. They probably think that I'm your father or father-in-law.
Noma scoffed.
By the way, have you always done that, Shigidi, or is it new? Olong asked.
Done what? Shigidi asked.
Ground your teeth. You are doing it just now.
Oh, that. Only when I'm stressed,
Shigiri answered, mildly embarrassed. Sorry, I don't always realize when I'm doing it.
It's called bruxism, and yes, he does it a lot, especially in his sleep, Noma added.
A server appeared and set a steaming cup of coffee in front of Shigiri. The smell hit him like he was inhaling pure vaporized energy.
I ordered it for you. You need it, Noma said without looking directly at him.
Anything for you? The server asked Olorun cheerfully. She was a short, frail-looking woman with wrinkled skin, who looked close to retirement herself. She was generous with her smile, her face framed by a shock of grey hair.
No thanks, unless you have some cola, Olorun asked coyly.
Cola? The woman asked, her eyes widened with confusion. But the smile was still in place.
We have Coca-Cola and Diet Coke. Would you like me to get you one of those?
No, forget it. We have all we need, thank you.
Noma rolled her eyes.
Very funny.
They both knew that Olorun's request was facetious. Shigiri took a sip of his coffee and the caffeine flowed into his system like wild electricity. Since Noma had transformed him into an independent spirit agent, he hardly ever ate or drank anything anymore, especially not alcohol, but he still loved cola nuts and coffee. The former because they stimulated his latent powers, making him feel like he could completely manipulate raw subconscious fear if there was someone asleep anywhere close to him. And the latter because it did something to the other, newer power lodged in his chest, making him feel more alert and capable, even in small amounts. He caught Noma watching him out of the corner of her eye, but she turned to her food when he met her gaze. She had reshaped him and given him so much. They made great partners. He'd been willing to give up his life for her, but she still held back from him, and it bothered him greatly that he didn't understand why.
Now that we are all here, can we finally focus on business?
Olorun asked. Yes, Shigiri said. Noma nodded, her mouth full.
Good, then let's go over the job.
The coloured beads around his wrist dangled noisily as Olorun reached for an ornate woven briefcase that he'd set on the floor beside him. He pulled out a sheaf of documents, then unfolded one of them to reveal a blue and white schematic drawing and spread it on the table in front of them, using Noma's wine glass to weigh down one of the edges. The schematic showed three floors of a building and had markings and symbols that Shigiri was sure were ancient runes inscribed all around it.
Celtic, German, Anglo-Saxon, Norse? I can't tell, but Noma probably knows.
This, Olorun said, soothing his hand across the drawing, is the British Museum. It's right behind us, more or less, and it is one of the largest museums in the world. Four wings, taking up more than 92,000 square meters of space and comprising almost 100 galleries, which display over 50,000 items, most of them stolen. Some of those stolen items rightfully belong to me or to my people, those who worship and believe in me. But one of those items is of particular significance to me right now. He looked up and swept his gaze from Shigiri to Noma. So, you are going to help me get it back. They looked at each other and then back to the old Orisha.
What is it?
Shigiri asked. Olorun leaned back again, pulled a photograph from the briefcase and set it on the table on top of the schematic.
This is what I need you to get for me.
The image showed a sculpted brass head of a man with bold eyes, wide nose, hard mouth, and a beaded headdress like a crown, which encircled the head in a three-layer composition, and from which a vertical, somewhat phallic plume extended, slightly bent. Parallel lines ran from where the headdress met the forehead to the base of the jaw. Small holes circled the mouth. The head appeared to be just a little under life size, symmetric, naturalistic, and obviously the result of exquisite craftsmanship, despite the patina and green-grey discoloration that betrayed its age. Shigiri nodded. He knew the image well. Noma shifted her glass slightly to the left and stared at it.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is,
Olong pushed the image aside and pointed to a circled area on the schematic, which highlighted the upper section of the museum's lower floor. Here is held in the African galleries on lower level 2, right opposite the Center for Education.
What about security? Noma asked.
Olong pulled out another piece of paper that had lists and numbers printed on it. He passed it to Noma, who scanned it quickly, running her long, red, lacquered nails down its length as she did. She said,
"It all looks fairly standard, almost boring. Basic scanners and bag checks before entry. The shifts rotate in a predictable way, about one guard per gallery. Cameras everywhere, so I suppose we'd need to be a bit careful to avoid being spotted if we want to get out of the country easily later. I mean, I could just temporarily change our appearance with some effort. Or we can just disable the cameras and avoid all that bother."
"Well, I can anyway." She put the paper down and looked directly at Olonru, holding his wrinkle-framed gaze.
"We are not thieves. And even if we were, there is nothing here that a good human crew of experienced robbers cannot handle. They could sneak in, create a distraction, snatch this, and be out in a few minutes. I imagine you could even do this yourself if you really wanted to, despite the Spirit Bureau tracker. So what do you need us for? What are you not telling us?"
Olonru smiled, deepening the lines of his face.
"You're right, of course. It's a little more complicated than it seems initially. Physical security isn't the problem, as you've rightly pointed out. The museum is protected by a special branch of the Royal British Spirit Bureau called Section 6. They are very secretive, and unfortunately my people on the ground here don't know much about them, except that they have ties to the very oldest spirits of this land, the ones that ran the spirit business here before the Christian takeover, and they are fiercely protective of what's left of the British Empire."
"Sounds like they would be fun at an Owambe," Noma rejoined sarcastically as she took another forkful of steak salad.
"Indeed, they are not party people at all. In fact, I don't think they even enjoy their work. But they do take it very seriously. However, I did manage to find out two interesting things, courtesy of Teju Adewumi Smith, new Deputy Commissioner of the Nigeria High Commission. These runes here and there," he said, pointing at two of the largest symbols along the edge of the building schematic. Together they looked like an H with a connecting line sloping downward. "They indicate an alarm for disruption," he continued. "The moment any item is moved more than 5 meters outside its exhibition space without the curator priest's pre-approval, the building will be automatically locked down by a Section 6 sealing ritual. Once locked, the doors won't open without fingerprint, retinal, and spirit particle authorization from the curator priest himself.
So, if we try to move the brass head of a balufon, we'll be trapped inside," Noma clarified.
"Yes," Shigidi grunted. "I can break us out of any barriers they put up. I've destroyed 4 shrines and killed 2 minor gods already."
Olonru nodded toward Shigidi's chest, as though he was trying to see through to Shigidi's core, where the power wrapped around his heart. The glow from Olonru's head left a trail of light.
"Yes, yes, I know you are eager to exercise your new abilities, eh, Shigidi? But, as you can imagine, most of the artifacts in that museum hold great power, psychologically, politically, and spiritually. If not directly to the British people, then for the people they were stolen from, and from the gods that feed on their belief."
"Like yourself?" Noma asked, before taking another sip of her wine.
"Like myself, exactly. And as long as the British hold them, they still hold considerable leverage and influence over those they subjugated long ago. This is the principle of the Commonwealth of Nations, and all that jagbajantis, even though the only thing the member nations have in common is that their wealth was plundered by the British."
He scrunched his nose with scorn.
"Anyway, the point is that this leverage and influence is valuable,
and it is something I am sure they do not want to lose. Couple that with the fact that this is being handled by Section 6, and, well, it may take more than a few well-placed punches or a blast of stolen lightning to get past that sealing spell. You should not underestimate the challenge, eh? If the alarm is activated, you may not be able to escape.
Norma curled her lips and nodded.
Okay, fair enough. So how do we make sure we don't get trapped inside once we get the item for you?
By being smart and using information.
He pointed back to the schematic.
According to Teju, the rune placement here means you will have a small window of time, exactly 1 minute, before the sealing spell's enchantment takes complete hold of the building. Which is where the good news comes in.
Shigidi chimed in. Good news?
Yes, Olonru said. He laid a piece of paper, crackling with spirit particles, on the table.
It showed another schematic, this one a vertical cross-section through all three floors of the museum, and what seemed to be a small substructure below it, linked by an upward-sloping tunnel to an exit through the first floor of a large nearby building.
There is a hidden structure below the lower floor of the museum. It's an old conference room for processing sacrifices, performing negotiation rituals and conducting business meetings with the various spirit companies that used to control the faith of people in this region thousands of years ago. Apparently, it used to be called the Pendragon Room. If you can get to it in time, then you can take this tunnel all the way to the building next door and exit there. Once you're out, make your way to the Nigeria High Commission on Northumberland Avenue as quickly and quietly as you can. That's the meeting place, Abby. Rendezvous point.
Why the High Commission? Norma asked.
That doesn't concern you. Just meet me there.
Olorun responded curtly. Norma's lips curled at the edges.
Let me guess, somewhere in the High Commission there is a secret room with something symbolic, some air or some soil or maybe even a tree from Ile Ife that you can use as a backdoor portal to the Orisha Spirit Company system to sneak in and out of the UK when things get diplomatically tricky?
Yeah, you're not stupid, Norma, but you're not nearly as smart as you think you are either.
Olonru leaned back in his chair and folded his arms.
Stop asking about things that don't concern you. Huh? Just meet me there once the job is done. Understood?
Norma raised an eyebrow.
So sensitive. If it's none of our concern, why don't you just get the brass head yourself then?
Olonru's eyes flared.
Can you even imagine what would happen to the Spirit Company and all the other Orishas if I was trapped by the Spirit Bureau here, arrested for violating spirit trade and border control laws? Hey, no, you can't. You can't even imagine the repercussions it would have on Yoruba reality. You only have yourself to think about. I can assure you that it's absolutely not worth the risk for me. I'll take my chances if you refuse or if you fail. But the risk should be worth it for you. Between the offer of company stock and free passage to all Orisha-held territories, despite Shongo wanting to murder you on sight, isn't that enough for you?
Norma stabbed another forkful of salad.
Sure, it is. Relax, Mr. Lecturer. You don't want to risk yourself and you think we are expendable in case things go wrong. Got it. Now, how do we get into the substructure? I assume this Teju person has told you about a passage connecting the two.
There used to be, but it was sealed off in September of 1945. It's all concrete floor now.
Norma swallowed.
I see.
Shigidi gulped down the dregs off his coffee and focused on the schematic in front of him. As he considered it, his expression hardened. Something about it seemed wrong to him, even though he couldn't immediately identify what.
It doesn't look right.
As a nightmare god in the spirit company, Shigidi could always clearly tell the difference between the nightmares he created and the reality of both flesh and spirit worlds around him, no matter how much palm wine he'd had or how elaborate the competing conjuration was. He could even carry on conversations in both real and dream space simultaneously, if he had to. That aptitude came from a well-calibrated internal sense of wrongness, knowing when things presented to his senses were not as they should be. That sense was in overdrive right now. He stared until it finally came to him with sudden clarity. "Are these dimensions here to scale?" he asked Olonu, without looking up at him. "They are?" Chigidi grunted. "Then this building can't possibly be here. There can't be another structure of this size so close to the museum. It would overlap with the museum itself." Olonu pulled up his Agbada sleeves, leaving trails of light on either side of him like wings, and flashed another broad, pearly smile. "Ah, you have a good eye, Chigidi, huh? Let me just say that half of the substructure, the half connected to the tunnel and the exit, is not located in this reality." Noma shook her head. "What do you mean, it's not located in this reality?" "I mean it's on the spirit side of London," Olorun said. Noma and Chigidi looked at each other uneasily, each knowing what the other was thinking. There were only three types of entities that could gain access to the spirit side of any city. One, official employees and immigration-approved contractors of the operating spirit company of the city. Two, the spirits of humans who had died in the city and were not allowed to proceed to the designated final resting place of their chosen faith, or had no faith at all. And three, people who knew how to manipulate and rewire the space-time coordinates of localized spirit particles, people also known as magicians. Noma smirked. "All right, so the only viable exit is in spirit space. Cool. Is there anything else of critical importance that you haven't told? Or are we just supposed to keep peeling this onion until we find the rotten core?" Still smiling, Olong said, "Yes, now that you mention it, Teju did say that the exit door can only be opened from the outside." Noma started laughing, a genuine, wild, and all-encompassing laugh that shook the entire table and drew disapproving looks from the other patrons. Chigidi stared at her in puzzlement until, coughing and half-choking on her own mirth, she composed herself and said, "Right, so if I understand this correctly, we need to sneak into the British Museum, get past the guards and cameras, enter a sealed gallery, snatch the brass head of Obalufon without triggering a magic alarm, break through, 6 to 8 inches of solid concrete floor in under a minute to enter a supposedly secret substructure, transpose ourselves onto the spirit side of London using magic that we don't have access to, and then escape through a door that can only be opened from the other side. Do I have all that right?" Olorun smiled again. "Yes, that sounds almost all right." "Almost?" Chigidi asked. "I need it done tonight. There's an important spirit company board meeting tomorrow, and I'll need it before then." Noma laughed again, this time leaning over and burying her head in the crook of Shigidi's arm. "No wonder you don't want to do it yourself. It's almost impossible, even for you," she howled with mirth. Chigidi gave Olonu a sharp look as they both waited out the storm of her laughter. When it was over, Noma sat up, whistled, stabbed up the last piece of medium-rare meat on her plate, and ate it before turning to her brooding lover. She wiped a gleeful tear from one eye. "What do you think, Chigidi, darling? Do you think we have a chance of pulling this off? Or does this old-timer just want us to die in a foreign land with this elaborate ruse? Cover up all the dirty work we've been doing for him?" Chigidi contemplated her question. He knew Olonu liked to play games, but he didn't believe this was one of them. There was an unfamiliar tension in the Elder Orisha's smile, an alien unease that Chigidi hadn't seen in Olonu before. It was something like fear, but not quite of the right texture, and that, in turn, made Chigidi uncomfortable. but they had already agreed to do the job, and they had come all the way to London to do it. So he said, in the calmest tone he could muster, "It's a tricky job, but it's not a suicide mission. We have a chance. But this is obviously a 3% job. Norma, you can easily use your charms to sneak us into the museum tonight, and a little spirit particle manipulation will deal with the cameras. Once we get the head and the museum is sealed, I can break through the floor and handle any additional security they have. The third person needs to be a local magician, someone intimately familiar with the spirit side of London. Someone who knows how to get us there and back fast. Someone who will be waiting on the other side of that door to let us out. Do you know anyone like that?" Norma tilted her head as she thought. "Yes," she said after a few seconds. She drained her wine glass and set it firmly back down on the table, rolling the thin stem between her thumb and index finger. A smile slowly spread across her face. "I think I do."